folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. Okay, so for today's JREP session, carrying right over from our Web3 and blockchain conversation the other week, we're staying on the tech track. And today we're talking smart homes and the Internet of Things, particularly as it relates to landlords and rentals, both short and long term. So smart locks, noise, pets, and other unregistered or unwanted guests monitoring, Wi-Fi control and beyond, marketing support, guest experience enhancement systems, central heating, not just for spaces, but for water and other things as well, remotely controlled cameras, and just automation in general. Software subscription models as the modern day substitute for purchasing a license outright, and a lot more. Oh, and we also riff on Matt's beard a little bit. So, really interesting conversation. Hope you'll enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side. All right, JREP session back in the house. We'll get right back into the conversation that you guys started offline. I'll just do a quick flash intro and get right back into it. Matt, abandoned, vacant, dilapidated homes anywhere in Japan.
Garbage
homes for $1 a piece. Emil, Tokyo family homes and mortgages. And Tracy, short-term stay queen. Go ahead, get right back. Oh, sorry, and me, investments and holiday homes. Go ahead, get right back into it. What were you talking about there?
Smart locks.
Okay, so we are talking about smart locks. So the type that I have in, that I was using and I stopped using them. So there are lots of types that I'll sort of show on the screen. They kind of fit over the existing, it's called a Samturn, I think it is. Samturn or thumb turn locks. So most Japanese households have, you know, the lock is a turn mechanism.
Traditional lock, let's call it.
In Japan at least. and these units, smart units, they fit on top of that device, and they basically have a motor inside that will physically turn and turn the existing lock that's there. So there's no modification to the existing door lock. It literally just sits on top, and some 3M double-sided tape, etc., that comes with it. That's how it is
on. The way that you're describing this, it almost sounds like you're selling it like, no. It turns the key for you.
The reason that we started this discussion is that I am looking at, you know, really updating a lot of my properties with some Internet of Things, you know. So at the moment, there's one particular property. You need three keys because there's the outer lock and then there's the internal, like, apartment. And it's like, you know, whenever people, you know, well-meaning people accidentally often take the keys home with them, and that's that, and then I've got to go and get them cut and, you know, refitted. So, you know, if I can, you know, convert people to a smartphone app, it's just hard because, you know, I know that when people land in Japan, they often don't have internet, and then to download a separate app to get the keys, it might be a little difficult. So I'll just have to think about my onboarding to make that, you know, make it, even though there's really cool tech out there, it's got to actually make sense, and it's got to be easier rather than just, and you know, like fun to have. So
that's what I was wondering with these locks, actually. Like, what happens if, you know, you've been out all night, run out of battery, there's no mobile phone to speak of, and you get back home, and then what?
So
same problem with losing the key, though, right?
Yeah.
Except that losing the battery happens a lot more often.
true.
Yeah, so I've gone through this. I've experienced all of these. This is why I've got maybe 5 or 6 of these devices, and they cost about, what, 20 to 30,000 yen each, right? And I stopped using them in all of my Airbnb properties. I had them on there for maybe a year in total, and then I stopped using them because of the exactly the stuff that you described, like the management, the fact that, you know, you have to connect to a smartphone, the battery type issues, onboarding people on how to use the app. I think it's fantastic. And look, they're all quite similar, I feel, like in terms of how they're going to be managed and the overall functionality. You basically go to the door and your phone will connect to the device. And there's different ways. The older version, you have to, like my ones, you have to knock loudly on the door and it will wake the smart lock up. And it will wake it and the Bluetooth will activate. And you turn on the app on your phone, it detects the Bluetooth, and you just hit the unlock button.
How does that go with neighbors at 2 o'clock in the morning if you're banging on the door?
No, because like it's just your door, right? And yeah, you just kind of knock. It doesn't have to be an overly loud knock, but it can be a little tap as well. That's really not an issue. What happens though is, I think the idea of the device is fantastic. If it's, for example, an office, you have an office, or even your own home, right, where it's the same people, same group of people that use the property, right? So onboarding only really happens once. And then people know how to use the app. They've overcome any issues with the app. They're able to download and sync it. Usually local residents aren't out, like, you know, the battery sort of dying is something that, you know, just tourists have happened a lot more than people, like when you live here, you're not going out all day touring the city on your phone using a map the whole day gone, right? You're going to work and coming back or what have you, like, you know, maybe Matt's a little bit different.
Yeah,
but apart from that, right? And like one solution I had, I'll explain it in a second. But for that, like, it's great because you can set, for example, if you've got a housekeeper or an office cleaner, you can say, okay, the office cleaner can only have access, their app is registered, and they can only use it on Wednesdays between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. So you know that they can't go in and out anything after that time. Okay, and you can set with the, like, for each user account, you can set the times they are able to access it. And you can also view on your app or even get a notification, someone has entered the house or someone has entered or someone has left when they open or when they lock. And there's a full log history of it. So you know when your kids have come home or if they've stepped out, right? It's really good for things like that. Or who was the last person to leave the office? Who was the last person to enter and then they wasn't locked? And you can even do remote function if someone sort of, you know, let's say there's a delivery or someone's come and they don't have the key, they can give you a call and you can remotely.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. So it works like that. However, the issue I had with it in terms of for short term and Airbnb type stay is, you know, some of my houses, I'd have like, say, 10 people stay or 14 people stay, and each one of them would want access. So I'm like, okay, everyone, download this app and tell all your friends to download the app, then give me their email that they registered. Then I have to go on the app manually, one at a time, enter their email and say, okay, this person is staying from Tuesday at 11 a.m. until Friday at 4 p.m. Right? And I have to do that for 10 people.
And you might do that 3 times a week or what?
There's 200 people a month.
Yeah, I'm currently testing an automation system that does that automatically, that sets the codes and actually, you know, contacts everybody directly. So that's what I'm testing out right now. So we'll see how that goes.
This is a very interesting topic because Emil, I totally agree with you for houses, for offices, for things, like you said, you know, where it's sort of the same group of people for long-term stays, it makes sense. But, you know, like you're talking about with batteries, losing your phone, this, that, and the other thing, like there's definitely some issues there. But on the same side, I've definitely stayed at an Airbnb and taken the key home with me, right?
Yeah. Like Tracy was saying, that happens a lot.
Right.
But it's expensive to get those things free.
Or you're a nice guy like me and you actually say, oh shit, I fucked up, and you go back and you give it back, right? That probably doesn't happen all that often, though, I'm guessing.
We charge people. We actually have it, if you take the key with you, we're going to charge you because I'm going to have to get it recut. Usually then, you know, I've had people post them back, even post them back from overseas. Yep. So it's been an interesting exercise.
The smartphones, I think you're right, Siv, for short-term stays, smartphones present a number of challenges that really aren't easily solved for short-term stays. But on the other hand, there's got to be something better than physical keys, right? Lock boxes are probably a pain.
Biotech will fix all of that once we all have an ID chip in our wrists. Yeah,
right. Obviously, there's something like that. What about digital touchpads that you can easily change codes on?
Digital touchpads where you can change and just remember. And usually the four-digit code would be the last four digits of their phone, their own phone number.
Or something like that.
And
right?
That last place
we stayed in, we were shooting a video in Kyoto and we're staying in a few of their machias. And that's exactly how it works. It's digital touchpads. He gave us the code when we arrived. And then I presumably he would have changed it after we left. That was it.
Mm. The other fun thought I had was if you go to, what is it? That burger shop in Roppongi, burger joint, burger. It's from California.
I haven't been.
And you go to a restaurant and they give you the buzzy thing for when your order's ready.
Yeah.
What
in and out?
In and out. Yeah. What if you just have like buzzy?
They have an in and out burger. Sorry, that's a different
story. Maybe it's I forget which one it is, but the other thing that occurred, what if you just had buzzy keys? So it's in your pocket and you leave, and once you get 20 meters outside of the apartment after your checkout date, it just starts buzzing wherever it is. Anyway, I'm just kind of shooting the shit here. But yeah. But it's interesting.
How about the keypad thing, Tracy? Wouldn't that work?
Yeah, that would work. It's just the issue that I've looked at a number of. I started looking at them a while ago, and sort of got dismayed because a lot of the Japanese companies were trying to charge me a per month per house fee to manage the dashboard. And when you've got 25 houses, and it's just like, dude, are you kidding me? No, we'll put this in for free for you, but then you're paying like 500 yen per house per month. It was like you start doing the numbers and it's like,
that doesn't scale.
It scales for them, not for me.
Well, yeah, for them. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Not when you're running multiple properties.
There are a lot of things, actually, that's something worth discussing. There are a lot of things that, because Japan tends to be, a lot of people who are listening from overseas might still have that very, very outdated 90s sort of image of Japan being the most expensive place in the world, but it's definitely not. It's actually half the price of a lot of common Western destinations that you'd go to. And we ran across this when we were trying to find a property management system. A lot of the really good ones that we would have wanted to get charge you by the door, but the amount that they charge you is based on the amount that they believe you're getting in rental income, which around the world could be 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 bucks a month. And here it could be 100, 200, 300 bucks a month. And it just doesn't work here, right? So same sort of thing. But you're saying that's a Japanese company that's doing that?
Well, there were a number of startups that were, that were doing this. And I couldn't, it wasn't enough of a problem for me to really, you know, do due diligence. You know, in the US, there's a bunch of products that work really well, and there are property management systems that, you know, run 300, 400, 500 doors, no problem. But they just don't work in Japan. And so, you know, between a rock and a hard place. But I'm really ramping up now on my, you know, my automation. I'm really putting into place some standard operating procedures. So this is on like back of house stuff.
Do you know Ashley Harvey?
I know Ashley.
Yes. Might be a guy to talk to about this.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if he had a good answer for you.
Ashley's awesome. He's definitely on the cutting edge of technology, all thing hospitality related.
Yeah. I've been doing onboarding today with the back of house system, and this is to set things like, you know, have all the tasks in, like, you know, when you're running a short term rental, you've got like every 3 months you want to go and change the dunny sheets, right? The bed bug sheets, and you want to go and, you know, every once a year you want to, you know, do a test on the fire alarms, and this is so that it's a scheduler for that, and then it assigns the jobs, and then it just so that you can track everything, because we were, you know, before the pandemic we were completely analog, all paper, and it's like, well, you know, let's, when we're restarting again, let's go digital, and really get some good systems. And also that way I can do myself out of a job, you know,
yes.
so that I can be doing something, you know, I can
That's
set this up idea. And have standard
That's
operating
the holy grail.
And then do myself out of a job, and then do the things that I really like doing. And that's finding properties and setting them up and, you know, making lots of money. That's what I like doing.
This is why I love automation and technology, right? Like, I understand the fear of some industry, but for others, I mean, just open up the time where you can still make the money and just use the time for other stuff that you
exactly.
want to do.
Exactly. That's what
Matt,
I want to do.
I just got to say, with this topic and this look of yours, you're so Jack Dorsey right now.
Yes. That beard is getting, it's like, we haven't seen you in a couple of weeks, Matt.
It's,
you feel like really
well,
epic.
And the background is really cleaning it up too.
Oh, right.
let me see about if I take that off. But no, there's a lot of, especially specifically this conversation about the lock stuff is happening in Inaka as well, which is highly encouraging because that's not exactly the place that you expect.
It's more rabbi-ish without the filter on, without the background on.
Right. It's a good conversation to have because, like everything, and I always find this out, it's a dynamic conversation. It's not saying automate everything. It's saying, hey, this lock thing is kind of presenting a problem for like a lot of people. For example, what if that were automated and just mm-hmm. makes pretty much everybody else's, like, if you end up getting, what's the robot from the, not the Flintstones, the Jetsons, like that gets rid of a blue collar job, which is maybe problematic. But the lock thing, automate the hell out of that. I don't know how that's gonna, you know.
Yeah.
But so also, what other things, Tracy, you mentioned Internet of Things. What other things were you looking at?
Well, you know, I'm just sort of comparing globally, the global trends with what's happening in Japan. So globally, there are things like noise aware, so noise monitoring systems, because you know, typically Airbnbs have been party houses, and you know, if you have a noise monitor, then when it gets to a certain point, it'll trigger and it'll say, hey, they're making noise.
Turn it down, damn it.
Shut the fuck up.
That way you can sort of address it before the neighbors get, you know, call the police, that type of thing.
It'd be cool if you could program it with like Matt was just making that kind of noise. Like you could just put in whatever wave file you want.
He's on the TV screen, on the LCD screen monitor. Matt's face.
Or maybe it's like a ghost house or something. So you've got like thumpers in the walls, and once it gets too loud,
somebody going on with the
boom. Like, oh, and you hear a scream, then you just scare them into being quiet.
Okay, so no, noise monitor. What else?
Noise monitors. Also, the Ring cameras at the front door. So if this is not an issue for us, because we meet every guest and we don't have a problem with people sneaking in extra people or sneaking in pets. That's a big problem in the US, like people sneaking in pets that aren't allowed or sneaking in people. So there's the Ring cameras that, like the door cameras that do that. Again, there's when you sign on to the internet, when you get the Wi-Fi, you can collect everybody. You can collect everybody's email addresses so that you can do some retargeting emailing. So for marketing. Also, if you've got too many people in the house, it'll alert you. There's a lot of like automatic trigger alerts. What other things that are people?
Anything that makes the guests' experience more smooth, or is it all just landlord oriented?
Some of it's landlord. A lot of it is to, you know, so a lot of it was to try and help landlords scale easily and also, you know, reduce the workflow, like reduce the regular workflow. Again, I'm looking at things like scheduling all of the safety checks and the cleaning systems, and you know, the stock, keeping the right amount of like cleaning products in, and so you can just be a little systems orientated that way. For the guest experience, there's a ton. There's like digital guidebooks where you can you can automate a lot of the guest communications. I do that now. I teach people how to do that now, on how to automate guest communications for the guest experience. I'm already doing a lot of the stuff on the guest side. This is sort of back of house that I've been working on.
Tracy?
Yeah.
How is Airbnb now? Because I have a management company that manages my remainder of my properties. How are they with automatic messaging? Airbnb introduced that?
They have, actually. They brought this in. It's automation light, I would say. It's a really... it's a lot better than it was. So this came in 2020, actually, it came in, that you could set the triggers based on, like, straight after a booking, you know, 5 minutes after a booking, you can have an automated message go out, and then 10 days before arrival, or however you want to set it up, there were certain triggers that you could set up the automations for. And that's a really a good way to free up your time, so that when you get individual questions, then you can answer, give better service, because you're not sort of frazzled and worn out just by answering the same stuff all the time. You actually can focus on the guests when they've got specific needs. It's not too bad. I mean, it's not AI based. It's not based on, like, you know, if they see certain keywords, then you automatically get a response back. There's a couple of scheduler systems out there. Right? It's just based on time triggers.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Because I remember there was one, like, in 2017, 2018, when I was doing it quite heavily. There was one service that I subscribed to that did an excellent job.
Yeah.
Of doing all of that, was just fantastic.
It wasn't Guesty.
It was some smaller, I think, a European company that did it, but it would integrate with, you know, integrated really well, and was just fantastic with all the templates and the automatic sort of scheduling and stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I used it for several years until sort of I handed it over to management and I didn't do it anymore. But it was really good. So I was just curious about how Airbnb.
It's okay. It's okay. I actually tend to do all my guest messaging through my property management system, because, you know, I just want to keep everything in the same place so that we're not looking at Airbnb and then VRBO and, like, so that we're just looking in the one spot to do all the guest communications. So, the other tools that you can get are things like, you know, the automated guidebooks. And then you could even, you know, go the extra mile and have the automated upselling. So if you've got a relationship with tour guides or private chefs or ticketing, you can actually send you can integrate with those and upsell and give you know, give tips and tricks based on your experience. So you would curate an experience.
Smart TVs would probably play a good role in that, right? Like you could actually custom, like the hotels do, like you can, you know, click on the remote control and just get this and this and that, and you can just
Are options that do that. So there's a company that uses a like a mesh internet service, so that when you get there and you get straight onto the Wi-Fi, you actually have a welcome screen, and that you can do things like you can have a little video, and you can have like welcome to the house, and here's how you use everything, and
like,
and then
you have
also
to sign up for this if you need a babysitter for tonight. Yeah,
which service is that? Mesh networks are my jam. Like you start talking about mesh networks, and
his eyes open.
It's a company called StayFi, but they use what's the company? They use a out of the box hardware, and then all they do is just add their own firmware onto the top of that, or other firmware software. They do it like a layer on, so that you can just plug the box in, and then you put in your put in the layer of their stuff, and then you've got a dashboard that you can that you can do. So, and it's a really good way of, like, let's say you've got 10 people coming to stay, like Emil was saying before. Usually you only get the email address of the main person who books. But, you know, you might have someone who's come in and you've got three families staying in the same house. You want to be able to retarget to those. So being able to collect all the email addresses, obviously with permission and all that, you know, opt-in, opt-out stuff, absolutely. But this way that you can actually send them an email and say, hey, welcome, this is specifically for you. Opt in, click here, and then you can be able to send them more messages later. So that's what that.
Oh, can I show off? Speaking of smart technology, can I show off and just give a free pitch for this really cool company that I've actually a while back. I just haven't shown this. Vice in the UK.
How's that working,
is brilliant. Even Japanese love it. I doubt that they'll be able to, you know, sell it to the companies that hire them to, you know, change all the paper cards, but they love it. You tap it, if the phone is new tap it on the phone and it comes up with your internet profile, and they can add you to their contacts immediately. And for older phones, they just scan the QR code, which everybody's doing with LINE anyway in Japan.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like what, ichiman yen or something like that.
The bamboo one is actually 5,000 or 6,000 yen.
Yeah, it's super.
The metal, I think, is ichiman or something.
Yeah. I would have to go with that one.
We interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits, or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorges, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
Yeah, when I was in the US just recently, there were a few people that had those, and they just, oh yeah, you know, get your contact, just tap it, and it just pops up on the phone, like, oh, you know, this is the person's info, save to contact. I had their photo, all that stuff. Jumping on to sort of what both, you know, Trace and Matt were talking about, Wi-Fi routers with a layer on top for management and mesh setups. One thing I've been looking at now, because, you know, more just about house Wi-Fi rather than short-term stay, controlling internet usage within the house. Mm-hmm. And there's different kind of kids monitors and stuff like that. Basically, kids are being on YouTube too much, or, you know, Nintendo Switch or whatever it may be. I know Netgear have included, there was a device called Circle, I think it's called. And that was basically for household monitoring of data usage. So you can just go on the app and, like, the Circle app and say, okay, stop all YouTube activity, or stop all YouTube activity on my son's iPad. And so it's at a Wi-Fi level. And
evil parent.
Apple gives you a bit of control over that with the family.
That's yes, but, like, I mean, that's on each individual device. Screen time on each individual device, and that's on an app. But if they go to a browser and then use it, and then they go to a different phone and use it,
or they go to the TV,
YouTube on the TV. This is at a router level.
Yep.
You can say no more YouTube traffic on selected devices or on the whole household device, the whole network. And you can do exceptions, like, you know, parents' phones only are excluded from this. So the Netgear now have this Circle app installed, and there are basic functions which are not subscription, but then you can pay, like, I think, like, you know, $10 a month for the subscription, which has more kind of monitoring and these other kind of controls. But that's sort of the app I've been looking at. But what are your thoughts? I want to do, like, a mesh setup, mesh Wi-Fi router setup, because I've got a 3-story house and we've got lots of dead spots. Mm-hmm. Which, Matt, maybe you can answer this. What device do you think is good for a mesh
setup for a household? Mesh networks are kind of weird, and you're going to want to talk to an actual engineer about those. My interest in them is specifically geared towards disaster situations, actually, because they're usually not based off of Wi-Fi. They're based off of Bluetooth, and hopping from one Bluetooth-enabled device to another, to another, to another, to another sort of thing.
You're talking wide-scale. Wide area,
right? And so these work, like, for example, journalists in Hong Kong use mesh networks for communications because there's lockdowns on various, you know, Twitter and whatnot. So it's a great technology. I don't have recommendations for the kind of thing that you're talking about right now, but totally dig into it, because mesh networks are super cool.
I know someone who does that, actually. He runs share houses, so but often with your 3-story house, the dead areas is because you've got your peaks are, like, overlapping each other and they're canceling each other out, right?
Wouldn't boosters fix that for you? Repeaters?
It can.
So now I just have the one router, one Wi-Fi router.
See, I've got one on each floor.
It's in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't. I've just got one main one in the house, so I've got some dead spots in some areas.
Yeah. And, but just get a couple of repeaters, stick one in each floor. They'll just boost the signals.
Yeah. There's some signal boosters which work really well. Yeah. And then all you need to do is just plug them into the wall, and they find the one. They find the signal that you've got, and then just rebroadcast the same signal. Yeah. Like, rather than having, like, for me, I've got different. Signals on each floor, so I had to actually sit down and actually move the frequency that they were delivering at, so that they weren't overlapping each other and canceling each other out.
But so I was thinking that, but now, just because I also want to do that Circle app, like, for the YouTube and traffic monitoring, I'm like, okay, that was initially a separate device, but now Netgear apparently have teamed with them and have it built into their routers. So the Netgear router is one that has the main unit, and you can have satellite units to just do a mesh. And, you know, if I can get something more costly and more fancier, then I tend to go that route. That's my habit. Yeah, as you get older, like, you can't spend so much on toys.
We're renting another office in the same building now, but it's going to be two floors above us. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely, I'm wondering how well the signal will travel. I mean, definitely not through the building because that's concrete, but I think out the balcony and into the balcony two floors above, we might be able to get away with a booster.
Just run an Ethernet cable dangling down.
Just run an Ethernet cable.
Those were the days.
But, you know, back to the conversation about the Internet of Things for short-term rental and for houses. I think we had a chat recently on one of our other panels was about the difference between the US and Japan, in that there's often central heating that you can control remotely. So like the Nest thermostat type thing.
So
that you can control how hot or cold the house is, how to, you know, monitor the pool, for example, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's available.
We also pointed out that it only works if the house is actually insulated well, right?
It only works, Japan just doesn't have a lot of that stuff right now, or if it does, I've just been old school, I'm not sure, there's not a lot of smart, I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, are sort of kitschy that you can say, you know, hey, Alexa or Siri, you know, write my shopping list, but that's just a digital version of an analog thing, rather than changing your incomplete relationship with how you work with a house.
Yes, please. I like that latter thing much more. One thing I'm curious about, though, is especially with the camera. What is it called? The IoT camera that you're talking about?
The Ring camera.
There's a whole lot of people who really hate those.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right. And so one thing I'm curious about is, you know, there's the cool solutions or potential solutions anyway that are out there that we've been discussing, and how if you know, in like an ideal situation, you use them like, oh my goodness, you can automate this, that, the other thing, blah, 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 blah. I'm also curious though about, especially in a Luddite country like Japan, what the effect on potential customers and how that affects your marketing activities. What potential is there? Because somebody might just be like, whoa, give me I want a key. Like, what is this touchpad thing? That freaks me out.
She services mostly foreigners though, right, Tracy?
I service mostly foreigners, but you know, there's really it's a push and a pull thing, really, between like the people. Often the reason people don't like cameras is that they know they're going to be trying to do something dodgy, right? And so, you know,
just opening a whole can of worms there, Tracy, know, with that discussion.
I know. It's like if you're planning to do something dodgy, you're not going to like a camera.
Or I just don't want to be on camera.
That's why they make love hotels.
And to be honest, I really, you know, I'm not someone, I don't really, you know, once you're in my house, I don't really care what you're doing. Like, as long as you're, you know, as long as you're not like doing anything illegal, I don't really care. But there are some hosts that, you know, want to like micromanage their guests, and I don't want to do that either. So there's a really, you know, first of all, you've got to be vetting your guests really well, making sure that they're a good fit for you, and then trusting them to be adults. So that's my point of view. But then there are some people that want to like stare at the camera and, oh, they're being naughty, I'm going to punish them for that. It's like, I'm not that. Oh my goodness, there are hosts that are like that. But
there's also a line to walk here, I think, with the when we're talking about balance. I mean, a lot of the things you've just described in the last like 44 minutes or what, they all come with subscription fees. And
yes.
I'm noticing that, you know, as the entire world is shifting to this, rather than buy something and own it, pay me a subscription, there's a limit to how many services I can sign up for on a given month, right?
Well, but I, as a as as a I've got two hats, right? I've got a, you know, I'm a consumer, but I'm also a software developer. As a software developer who makes apps for mobile phones, the subscription model is way better. You can offer like a $1 or $2 subscription, and you've got the incentive then to keep updating and to keep adding new services. So as a developer, it's so much better to 100%. Have a subscription.
I completely agree with that. As a consumer, rack up 200 of these $1
subscriptions. You've got to be on top of it. And then you can buy a service that will then unsubscribe you from all the things that you've forgotten that you've subscribed to. So there's it's just, again, a new way of human behavior interacting with the machines that make our lives easier. So, you know, you do have to, you know, the software developers make it really easy to sign up for a subscription and make it very hard to sign off. And I get that. So just as a consumer, you've just got to be, you've just got to use discernment about what is going to make the best impact in your day-to-day life, and what's going to help you be more productive, and what's just a dingle dangle that is a bright and shiny object. You've got to have that discernment and have that, you know, once a month, once a quarter, put your CEO hat on and go, do I need this service? Is this adding value to my life? If not, then delete. So you've got to have that as a discipline, I think.
I think it's easier. Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, to a certain extent too, like I agree with Ziv, your critique about like, well, geez, I can't, you know, if I have a bunch of subscriptions, suddenly I'm, you know, paying however much per month, and that's not tenable. I would say, though, that there's also an incentive put on the landlord side of consumer to, like, if it's a smart person who's doing this, going step by step, figuring out, oh, okay, that product worked for me, I'll keep it. Oh, next one that we tried, that one didn't work. If it's a smart landlord, they'll do that, and they'll amass, and they'll see ROI increase. They'll have the funds to further reinvest in their own business. And ultimately,
that was what I was going to say. It's actually a lot easier from a business perspective. If I'm running a business providing a service, it's easy for me to see what benefit I'm getting, how it factors into the ROI, how much it's costing me, and how much is saving me. But as a consumer who's subscribing to things because I want to have something, I need something in my daily life, or I hope that'll make life smoother for me. If I'm then introducing an hour or two a month of reviewing all my subscriptions and seeing which ones I want to opt out of, I haven't really made my life that much smoother, have I?
Well, yeah. There are different, you know, there are some services that we think there's two ways, like buy outright, and then there's the ongoing service model, right? Subscription model. I used to think, yeah, you know, there's still something like software, like Microsoft Word. Right, I don't need the current one. Like my one, which is 4 or 5 years old, which I own outright for Microsoft Office, is sufficient. I don't need the subscription model, the 365 and all that sort of stuff. I just don't. I'm not enough of a user. But things like Spotify, okay, music. Yeah, give me subscription. I don't want to have to buy music. Okay, I want like whatever kids movie my kids are just watching now. I want to be able to just, hey, put on, you know, the Sing 2 soundtrack. Right. And
I was just screaming about this on LinkedIn earlier this morning.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what it is. Right. And I'm not going to listen to those soundtracks forever. They're temporary. So I like the subscription. I don't like the data being stored, having it. And similar with that, you know, I said before that app Circle, which is built into Netgear, but you have to pay a subscription for it. It's like, okay, you can have some basic features and basic monitoring, or if you want the free thing, you can buy your own router that you can put your own layer of software management on it and manage it, but they're clunky as hell, right? Mm-hmm. Like those third-party ones, they're really clunky, not user-friendly, because it's developed for free and there's no real incentive for the company to keep updating it or what have you. So I like,
there are some services that I'm happy to pay. Have the option, though? How long will we still have the option to buy something outright? Because it looks like more and more that option is not being offered on a lot of channels anymore, right? It's just, this is the only way we work, take it or leave it, right?
I'll also say, Tracy, you might be able to comment on this. The open source community itself, with alternatives to, for example, the Adobe Suite, is rather quickly, especially for Mac, becoming less and less productive, losing developers and all of this stuff. So it's not even just, oh, when are we going to lose the ability to buy something outright versus the ability, or rather a forced subscription. But there are also, the third option is going the open source route, right? And a lot of open source projects, GIMP, for example, which was a really excellent open source photo or image editor, as almost as powerful as Photoshop, although certainly more difficult to, with a higher, what do you call, difficulty of use, hasn't had a Mac developer for like 3 years now. So it's like a pretty busted product on Mac that I know how to use, so I still kind of use it. But yeah, so this is actually a very big worry of mine. It's not just buying outright, but also like all open source alternatives seem to be going down right now.
Well, I can comment. I mean, this is sort of not real estate based, this is sort of software based, but you know, as an app developer in the early days of the iPhone, you could only buy apps outright. And then you bought it on the original iPhone, but then your customers expected that to be free updates. You know, if they bought an iPhone 2 or whatever, they still expect to be able to use it on an iPhone.
The app, right.
Right. You've bought a new, you're quite happy to shell out $1,000 each time to get a new phone. The software has to be rebuilt every single time. So, you know, if people say, oh, look, I've been a customer of yours for 10 years, you know, I don't, but part of me wants to say, well, you know, what have you done for me lately? Kind of
thing. Like, yeah, you've been a customer of mine for 10 years because you paid me $5 10 years ago.
You paid me $5 10 years ago. And the thing is, the phone, if you still use the phone that it worked on, the app's going to work perfectly fine. You bought it at that particular point in time. It works on that phone. So yeah, if there's bugs that come in later on, just give me a moment. I'll get to them. So that's why as a developer, having a subscription model is so much more incentive, because you know it's not this massive Ponzi scheme, which is like buying things outright on the App Store is a massive Ponzi scheme. If you want the app to be continued to be developed today, then you need continually new sales to, you know, I like putting food on my table.
But assuming when I buy software, I'm kind of assuming it's only going to be good for at best 4 years, right? Because that's usually when previous two or three models will become obsolete, right? So I'm kind of factoring that.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that Tracy was saying is like, you know, if you get the customer that says, well, I've been a customer of yours for 10 years, the response to that is, yeah, and I've been doing work on the same product for 10 years.
Exactly. But you know,
pay me for
it. I understand that they're saying, I've been really loyal to you for 10 years. And like, I appreciate that. So, you know, but part of me goes, as a consumer, I understand. But then as a developer, I've got a, you know, it's a different different model.
And again, I think there's probably balances for like the automated keys and, you know, various management platforms for real estate, as well as all other types of technology. I think there's still, we're in transition between that buying things outright and then doing the subscription. So there's still a balance in this way that hasn't yet. I mean, for example, for, you know, B2C, right, kind of stuff, probably buying outright makes more sense. But for like a B2B in a landlord situation, a different pricing model is probably more appropriate in a specific situation.
I can tell you that, right? As a consumer these days, when I see something that's actually advertised as pay once and own it, like, ta-ching, like my eyes light up, right?
Yeah,
like,
I want that.
Yeah.
Well, what's something that, you know, like, a recent thing that comes to mind that was subscription, which you wanted as a one-off?
Well, Office is fortunately somehow still available, but that was one of the big ones for all of our Office PCs.
Microsoft Office, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Microsoft Office. But the other thing is, again, it's usually related to software, but Toonly, it helps you create animated explainer videos or marketing videos. It's a really nifty platform. I always had my eye on that, but it was always in a subscription model. And then, you know, a few months back, they suddenly had a sale for like pay once and own it for life. And then I jumped on that. Yeah.
Well, the life, it's not life, your life, it's the life of the, you know, the life of the device or the life of the, you know,
the app.
But I mean, fortunately, Windows, Windows and Mac operating systems don't go that, don't go obsolete as quickly as a mobile device, right?
So how many times was the, how many times was the annual, like the lifetime membership was equivalent to how many annual subscriptions or how many monthly subscriptions?
I think.
And that's usually how they price it.
That's how you price it normally. It's
like a 5 year.
Are you going to use it? You're going to use it for 12 months?
No, no, no. It was more like I think 2 years. I think they were going at $5 or $6 a month, and they just had a deal where you could get everything for $100.
I think I think 2 years to 3 years for a life, like equivalent of subscription for lifetime membership, is good value. But the place that, like, you know, that I think there are some that are just seem obnoxiously more than that. It depends, but yeah, there's a balance there.
I'll give you another example of one that turned me off, right? Like, I used to be a big fan of Masterclass. I used to buy a lot of classes that I was really interested in. You know, I might use it in my professional or personal life. I might not. I might be just interested in looking at it. But then it suddenly turned from, you can't buy a class anymore. You can only buy the class or full access to all Masterclass for a year. But I don't know when I'm going to get to watch that. I want to have it sitting on my hard drive so that I can watch it whenever I want to.
You know what I think is funny? A number of years ago, LinkedIn's owned by Microsoft, right? I believe now. And around the same time of acquisition, it was either LinkedIn as a company or somehow LinkedIn ended up acquiring, what was it, lynda.com, which is basically the original Masterclass, right? Or Udemy or Codeacad, because it's just everything. And what a lot of people don't know, I have a premium subscription to LinkedIn, right? And it comes with a lot of advantages. I think it's actually a decent product, although I have a very strange relationship with LinkedIn, but that's another story. One thing that I think it's about $30 a month, for the LinkedIn subscription comes with that a lot of people don't notice is a full subscription to the entirety of the continuously updated what was lynda.com educational library, right?
Yeah.
And so, and like basically nobody realizes that, like, oh, holy shit, on top of all of these other just things that are readily apparent to me as an advantage for getting a LinkedIn premium subscription, you've also got continuing education, like basically ad infinitum.
That is interesting. Like, collaborations and package deals like that are quite interesting, and, you know, in a lot of cases do make the difference, I think. But I think we're slowly getting to the hour mark. So
we have. Yeah, this has been fun.
Yeah, good conversation.
It's been fun talking about Internet of Things. I'd like to know, you know, what our listeners, our watchers are using. Maybe you can tell me what is, you know, if you are in the real estate game, what is working for you and what tech I haven't seen yet. I'd like to hear from.
Let us know when you're traveling, what you came across in your own home, what you're using. That'll be interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi connected air conditioners.
Wi-Fi connected air conditioners.
Do we need them
coming home? Coming home, wintertime, heat up, the kids asleep in the car, heat up the kids' rooms in the living room, just start it up and go. Or, you know, you're in your room and what's the temperature in the kids' bedroom?
Smart homes, smart coffee, homes are a thing
put
of
the coffee
future.
On in the morning.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for your time, folks.
Good to see you again soon. Hopefully I'll be here next week too, but if not, I'll be here. I'll try to promise.
Yes, put it in your diary, Matt. Put it in your diary. Just block off.
It is, but then, like, money comes in.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, what, you actually work? I thought we're just doing this for fun. All right. See you soon, guys.
Yep, see ya.
See you guys. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.
So there you have a deep dive into the smart homes and tech rabbit hole. Really fascinating stuff that's being updated and reinvented on a daily basis. Can't wait to see what other innovations the near and not so near future has in store for us. Brave new world and a really fun topic, or at least I thought so. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.